At this time of the week, we usually like to sit down with an author to talk about their books and how they approach writing. We think of it, the segment, as the writer's segment, but really what it is a chance to have a conversation with storytellers. So what does that idea of storytelling mean when you're writing from the perspective of the oldest continuous culture in the world? It's an idea we're going to explore tonight with two of this country's most exciting Indigenous writers. Claire G. Coleman is the author of The Old Lie and the Stella Prize shortlisted debut Terra Nullius. She's also a Noongar woman and her family belongs to the south coast of Western Australia. And also with us is storyteller and performer Nadi Simpson, a Yalwalaray woman. You might know Nadi from her work as one half of the Indigenous music group Stiff Gins, but a little over a month ago she also became a novelist with the release of the book called Song of the Crocodile. Hello, guys, and thank you so much for joining us, Claire and Nadi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Indira. Thank you.
And I just want to get in early and wish you both a happy NAIDOC week for next week.
Yeah, great. Thank you, NAIDOC. I love NAIDOC. There's so much wonderful.
Yes. Well, the theme
things going on.
Yeah. Well, the theme this year is always. Was, always will be, and it recognises that First Nation people have been here on this continent for at least 65,000 years. That's a very long history. In that context, what does it mean, being an Indigenous storyteller, to you, Claire?
Well, although I don't actually write stories steeped deeply in culture, I mostly write post-colonial science fiction. It's important that we are part of the oldest living culture on Earth because we have the deepest storytelling tradition on Earth, and it's important that Indigenous authors can tap into that.
And what about for you, Nadi?
I think I just feel like I am one very small link in a very long chain, and what I do is in the footsteps of people that have gone before me, and hopefully leading down a track that somebody might walk down a little after me.
Now, Nadi, you describe yourself as a Yawularay storyteller rather than a writer. Why is that?
Well, I started out sort of telling sung stories as a musician, really, and the more I've done it and the more I've sort of changed the mediums that I've been exploring, I realised that story is a much better way to talk about these things because it's an embodied experience. It's not in – I certainly don't classify it in terms of literature or music or art. That I think my understanding of story means that there are all those dimensions of things in the one. So, you know, story suits a lot better for me in that a book can have beautiful movement and images and symbols as well as narrative. So it's sort of that word story speaks a cultural language a little bit better for me.
All right, Nadi. So how does a book like your Song of the Crocodile then relate to your musical expression in the Stiff Gins?
When I first started, I thought my songs were getting really long and maybe a little bit boring, so it might be time to transition into another way of telling stories. But and I thought I was moving away from one kind of discipline and into another, but, you know, it takes a while for me to kind of catch on to the real gist of things. And I realised the further I got into writing that there is melody in narrative as much as there is story in song. And so I found that I could really I could find a space where things were very similar and that music can translate on the page. And I kind of, because it's the first thing I've written, I played with that, so I wasn't in completely unfamiliar territory.
And so tell us a little bit about your book, Song of the Crocodile. It's an historical epic starting back in the 70s. What inspired it, Nadi?
My daddy's one of 11 kids, and they were brought up in a little town in northwest New South Wales called Walgett. And when I hear Dad talk about his childhood, they always talk about this place that they lived along on the river, not allowed in the middle of town, but living out on the river with other Aboriginal families. And this place where they lived was sort of made of the town scraps. And when I hear Dad talk about this time, you know, 60-odd years ago, it sounds to me in my modern sensibility that they had nothing, you know, and they were sort of kept at an arm's length, and it was made sure that they had very little except the people that were next to them. But I hear Dad and his brothers and sisters talk about this time as being the richest time of their life, their golden years. So I really wanted to write something where I could almost time travel and go back and see and hear and smell relationships and landscape the way that they may have. That's why I kind of wrote this story about a town called Darnmore and the campgrounds that are out along the river. And I really wanted to interact with part of my history, where I come from, even though, you know, I wasn't even thought of at that time. I wanted to embody that time and that place, really.
And Claire, your novels take a different approach to Nadi's. You tell, in the way you tell Indigenous stories, you work in speculative fiction. The Old Lie and Terra Nullius both take place in worlds that are not the world we are living in today, but should still feel very familiar, particularly to Indigenous Australians. Why have you taken this style of approach in your storytelling?
Well, in my storytelling, well, both my novels have been driven by real history of Australia. Terra Nullius was telling the story of the early colonisation and the genocide, and The Old Lie was telling the story of the Black Diggers. But rather than actually write direct historical fiction, I decided to shift them into speculative realms, because I believe that it's possible, if you write speculative type fiction, to build your world around your story rather than having to shape your story to fit your world. And I thought in the case of what I was trying to write, the speculative fiction enabled me to tell the truth in a way through the fantastical, by not having to worry about the nitty-gritty details of the story and focusing rather on the broad strokes of what was going on. And I found that was quite a powerful tool. So I've done it twice now because I thought it was quite useful. But the important thing was that I was using speculative fiction to tell historical truths in a different way.
And what are the challenges when you tell stories that way?
Well, the challenge is that you've got more to create. You've got more worlds to build. When you're writing historical fiction, building the world can be simply a case of reading your history and finding out what happened. Whereas if you're writing speculative fiction, you've got a lot more kind of groundwork to do to build your story. But once you've got the groundwork, the story kind of flows just as easily.
Okay. You're listening to ABC Radio. This is Nightlife with Indira Naidu. And tonight on The Writers, I'm talking to two leading Indigenous writers, Claire Coleman, author of Terra Nullius and The Old Lie, and Nadi Simpson, whose new book is Song of the Crocodile. Nadi, coming back to you, you write in historical fiction the conflict between demands of facts and the larger truth. How did you approach it in your writing, and I guess your songwriting too, that conflict?
I think the thing that I learnt is that you don't, when you are dealing with things that are cultural truths in a narrative world, you don't have to explain or describe or give the whole picture to everyone. I think that in those areas of the in-between or of the overlap or of the misunderstanding or of the relationship that isn't working, almost just describing that and holding a place for that is enough. That I think I know I definitely, even though I have a lot of opinions and ideas about how I would wish everybody works together and how culture is framed in this country, it is much more powerful, I think, to present a complexity rather than present your opinion. And that's the beautiful thing that I found for writing is that you can take your time in doing that. And by doing that, creating that on the page, you can draw people in and give them their own space to think and interact with complex cultural things.
And do you find, Nadi, that when you're telling a story from an Indigenous perspective, that that requires you to place a different lens on it?
I guess I'm lucky. I mean, I've always kind of, my eyes are, and my mind's eye is geared that way. So I'm very lucky that I always feel connected and I always feel in relationship and I always try and privilege land and landscape in everything I do, just in the way that I am. Mm. And so I really enjoy doing that. On the page, it doesn't feel like a restriction or a responsibility that I have. That's just the way that I choose to walk in the world. And when I get to explore those things, I'm at my happiest.
Mm. And what about you, Claire? Do you feel compelled to tell mainly Indigenous stories?
I feel compelled to tell stories that matter to me when I'm writing. Which means most of the time they're Indigenous stories because they're the stories that matter. And I think it's important for me to use my stories to unpack and interrogate historical truth and historical lies. So the big lies in Australia are around colonisation. So telling the story of that is what matters. And also I don't think it's possible. It's actually possible for me to not write about that because people tend to do their best writing when they're writing their own perspective or writing what they understand best. And what I and most other Aboriginal people understand best, particularly those of us who've been profoundly affected by colonisation, like a lot of Western Australians have been, a lot of the time the stories that are easiest to look at are the stories of the colonisation. Not easy to look at as in they're without pain, but they're easiest to find because they're the stories that we face every day when we see our families or face every time we speak to our parents. Those stories, it's not that those stories have to be looked for. Those stories, it's very difficult to even avoid them.
Hmm. And Claire, your latest novel, The Old Lie, is inspired by some of the experiences of your grandfather, I understand.
Yes.
How did you talk with your family about telling that story?
The story about my grandfather, my grandfather was a Indigenous digger, and when he returned from World War II, he was not given the same rights as white diggers. Although I used the experience of having been to my grandfather's grave and seeing it unmarked, even though he was a digger, it was what inspired the novel. But then from then on, I mostly wrote more generically from the point of view of Aboriginal Australians who went away to war and weren't citizens when they returned. It's funny, the history of that is actually there for anyone to look for who looks for it. It's no secret that Aboriginal people who returned from World War II were treated differently to white people who returned from World War II. And I spoke to my father about the stories, but my dad didn't really remember much of the stories either. It's almost like it's a part of history that even people involved don't talk about. And a lot of what I wrote was quite literally in the history books, so I drew from that a lot. Aboriginal soldiers in WA having not been given war memorials, soldiers' memorials was such a common phenomenon that was actually an entire organisation started to find Aboriginal diggers without the soldiers' memorials and fix that problem. And that's how prevalent it is.
Mm. And how difficult was that for you as a descendant of someone who was treated, you know, in that unjust way?
Well, it made me constantly furious. I've been, ever since I found out the history of how black diggers were treated after World War II, I've been angry about it. And for me, when I've got a negative emotion, the way I deal with it is by putting it in a story. And that way it kind of enables me to neutralize it to myself somewhat. So once I've written about something, I feel a lot better about it. So it was actually a relief to write it down. It was a horrible thing to discover, but a relief to write it.
Mm. Now, Indigenous Australians who are writers are often, you know, labelled as Indigenous writers. I mean, it's how we introduce both of you on our show tonight. Do you feel that that tag is a restrictive one? Maybe if I can come back to you, Nadi?
I don't really. I mean, when I started singing, I think it was, and it had a lot to do with the age that I started these things. When I started singing 20 years ago and we were described as an Indigenous band, I felt that that was very limiting because there was a description of what you do before you've even opened your mouth to sing a song.
Mm.
But I came to writing a lot later and where I'm at in my own cultural journey means, you know, I don't find any cultural relationship that I am involved in any type of restriction at all to me. So, you know, I think I'm able to say that, you know, people can call me what they want and you can read the book and then that might change. But the work sort of speaks to who I am and what I do and what I love. So I'm happy to let the work speak for itself and, you know, I don't mind.
And how important, Nadi, do you think it is that Indigenous people tell Indigenous stories?
I think it is crucial. I sort of can't emphasise any more how, you know, look, I'm very lucky. I've come from Black and White Indigenous Writers Fellowship. I've had a lot of opportunities to explore my own creativity for a long time and I have benefited from a lot of really wonderful Indigenous initiatives. But many of those who came before us did not, and their stories were told, or versions of their life actually were told by other people. Even, you know, we have both, Claire and I, spoken about our families and we have engaged in telling their story, in my case specifically because my dad was unable to do that. He was, the space that our families were historically given was insignificant in the larger scheme of things. So, you know, and we are experts. That's the other thing, mm-hmm. Indira, you know, that we've been doing it. We go, you can say 60,000, but we can say since the first sunrise. Mm. We've been doing singing and dancing and creating image and telling story since the beginning of time. And so we're really good at it. So I guess the emphasis is on a reader that if you want to engage with something that is unique to this place, and speaks, as Claire was saying, a truth, look for that from Indigenous people.
And Claire, what's your view? Can non-Indigenous people tell Indigenous stories?
I think it's non-Indigenous people telling Indigenous stories is really fraught and quite dubious. And I'm not saying that no one should ever have an Indigenous character in a novel or in a movie or something. That would be complete lack of representation and just as bad as having been written about by non-Indigenous people. But I think it's important that after 232 years of other people writing about us, we get given more opportunities to write about ourselves. And also, I'm of the strong opinion that when somebody writes down a novel or something, to an extent, every character they write the internal life of that character is actually the author's, because they can't really imagine an eternal life, a completely internal life that's different, that's completely different to their own. So if a white person writes an Indigenous character from an Indigenous point of view, in reality, the inner world of that character is the author. And if it's a non-Indigenous person, then a white person has centered themselves in an Indigenous story. And I don't think that's right. And I don't think any writer in the world is good enough to write an Indigenous point of view and not put themselves into it and therefore write themselves as Indigenous. I think that is in itself is extremely risky.
Okay, interesting point. You obviously, within Indigenous Australia, there are many, many hundreds of different nations and cultural groups. So are you both conscious, as Indigenous storytellers, about whose story you're actually telling? Claire?
Always and constantly. I think that I personally feel dubious about telling the story of other Indigenous people. A lot of the time I get around that by telling the story of the colonial spasm that is Australia, and that's because that's pretty much universal across all Indigenous people. Colonisation affected us all almost identically. But if I was writing, I would never write cultural knowledge of an Indigenous mob that's not my own. I just could not bring myself to do that.
And Nadi, what about you?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, part of me being who I am is knowing how to respect other people. So, you know, I would never do that. I would never write another First Nations mob story, because not only would I be transgressing a space that is rightfully theirs, I would be transgressing my own Yuwalaray expectation of how to support culture and cultural people. Yeah, wouldn't do it.
Now, both of you were recipients of the Black and Right Writing Fellowship that's run by the State Library of Queensland. Tell me how important that was and what the experience was like. Nadi?
Oh, it was world-changing. I mean, I still am a little know-nothing, and I had written something, and a really wonderful mentor of mine said, put it in for this thing and you will get feedback. You know, you cannot go wrong. And my work was at the stage where I needed input from people, and I was so fortunate, absolutely lucky, and so grateful that that manuscript was taken on. And then I entered into a year-long relationship with two absolutely deadly young black editors who not only helped my manuscript get, you know, polished up, but they supported me on my learning journey and understanding what the landscape of writers and writing looked like. There was sort of as much professional, personal and cultural support for me as there was support for the work I was doing. And, you know, I wouldn't be talking to you guys tonight at 11:30 on a Friday night if I hadn't been fortunate enough to benefit from Black and Right Fellowship.
And Claire, what effect did it have on your writing?
Well, I had wanted to be a writer, but I never believed I could be for my entire life. And the Black and White Prize, not only did it give me important mentorship, but it actually opened my eyes to the idea that opportunities like this could exist. And I'm now on my third novel. My third novel is in editing right now. And I don't think there would have been even a first one without the Black and White Fellowship. I'm not saying it couldn't have been published if I pushed it, but the Black and White Fellowship gave me the confidence to become a writer. Without that, I would never have done it. And it's interesting because the mentorship is so important, and the senior editor at Black and White now, who's mentoring the young editors, was actually the young editor when I did my manuscript was published. So Nadi and I actually have kind of shared an editor through the Black and White Project, and then we shared a publisher and a publishing company. So these relationships are really important, and I cannot emphasize strongly enough how much projects like the Black and White Prize make it possible for Indigenous people who would not even imagine being writers to become writers.
Mm. Well, thank you so much to both of you for chatting to us on Nightlife tonight. I really enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Claire Coleman, author of Terra Nullius and the Old Lie, a Noongar woman from Western Australia's south coast, and Nadi Simpson, a Yawuluray songwriter, storyteller and performer from northwest New South Wales, one half of the Indigenous music group Stiff Gins, and author of Song of the Crocodile, joining us on Nightlife tonight.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.